Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report with me, John Arola, and that's it. It's just me. Is that enough? I ask you, is that enough? Some of you will say no. And to that I say, I'm too bad. It's just, you got me. But others might be excited, okay? And perhaps you should be, because there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Not only in the first hour for those of you who are watching live, or perhaps on the podcast, we're going to be talking about Mars. We're going to be talking about psychopathic cannibals, you know, just American politics stuff. We're going to talk about Fox just trying to convince their workers that it's a bad thing that their pay might go up. I love a good challenge for the media, so that'll be fun. We've got women demonizing women and bad news for Ted Cruz. So, what do you know? That rhymed. That's all in the first hour. Coming up in the last half hour for the aftermath, David K. Johnston is returning to the show. And we're going to talk about some stories having to do with the election, having to do with the Supreme Court, the upcoming hush money trial. A lot of interesting stuff coming up in that as well. So, prepare yourself, perhaps with a hot beverage, perhaps make yourself some toast or something. I don't know. Gird yourself as we jump into 90 minutes of fascinating news. And if you're on a platform where you can do it, you can hit the like button, you can share the stream. I would also say that while you're preparing yourself for today's show, you should also be preparing yourself for Super Tuesday, which is happening. Will it be super? That remains to be seen. But it's definitely going to be a Tuesday, and it's definitely going to be an election. And we're definitely going to be responding live to the results coming up at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific later on today on every platform that has sequences of images that you can watch. Anna Kasparian is going to be there. Myself, J.R. Jackson, Jordan Ewell. We're going to be breaking down the results, the consequences and implications of those results, and talking a little bit about the election in general, the state of the country, where things might go from here. It should be a fun conversation. We're all going to be at the same desk together, which is wild. And there'll be other people coming in along the way as well. So definitely prepare yourself for that. And with that, why don't we just see people excited? JR is going to be there. Isn't that cool? And I am excited to see that the YouTube chat is working once again. It broke during the pre-port and now it's working. So if you had something to say back then and weren't able to, if you were silenced by the machine, you can send me comments now. You might even get yourself a Blueprint gift card. Now with that, why don't we jump into some of the insanity, starting with this.
Millions and millions of people coming in illegally. And they're coming from places unknown, and they're rough people, in many cases from jails, prisons, from mental institutions, insane asylums. You know, insane asylum, that's Silence of the Lambs stuff. Hannibal Lecter. Anybody know Hannibal Lecter? We don't want them in this country. You know, where people are coming from parts unknown, countries that you've never heard of, languages that nobody in this country speaks. You know, we don't even have teachers of some of these languages. Who would think that? We have languages that are like from the planet Mars. Nobody knows how to, you know, speak it.
I have been trying for some time to understand why Donald Trump has all of a sudden gotten on this train of there's languages that nobody understands. And I really do think that it comes down to not like 4chan conspiracies or whatever. I think it's just he is no longer able to understand some of the words that he hears. And rather, as always is the case, rather than consider the possibility that he is the one with the problem, he instead puts it out onto the world and we all have to suffer as a result. So according to Trump, former president, perhaps next president, there are migrants coming in who speak languages that nobody has ever heard. They're coming from places we don't even know. And I mean, how in the end would you find out? Would you ask the migrant where they're coming from? That's crazy. Of course, you couldn't do that. And so I guess the languages are coming from Mars. And that wasn't even the craziest stuff. He literally mentioned Hannibal Lecter. Okay, Silence of the Lambs. And did you notice that in that ridiculous like facade of an interview that RBSN did, that every single thing he said, the audience laughed, even though it wasn't like a joke? Like he referenced Silence of the Lambs and they all laughed. What was the joke in the Silence of the Lambs? Is it just that I don't automatically associate, oh, crazy psychopaths, that's migrants, that's funny, the idea. Maybe they're killers, maybe they're cannibals, that's comedy gold. Maybe that just doesn't naturally fit into my brain in a way that it clearly did for them without needing any other explanation. They laughed even about the planet Mars thing. These people are twisted, deranged. You know what they speak? mostly Spanish. That's mostly what people coming across the border are speaking are Spanish. And I think there's some people who actually understand it. You know, there might be some other languages. There might be some people that speak like Hindi or something like that. Maybe there's some Portuguese coming across the border. All of these, even for me as a non-expert, conceivable. I can hold within the capacity of my skull the idea that people would speak these languages. But for them, no. The fact that Donald Trump has all of a sudden decided that in every public appearance, he's going to mention the fact that nobody knows what language they're speaking is not only understandable to them, it's compelling to them. They like the idea that these people come from effectively nowhere. It's not a place, because places have domestic situations. They have perhaps explanations as to why a person might want to leave. In fact, if one were to dig deep enough and care enough to understand the history, it might be that in some of these places, perhaps America had an effect on the domestic politics of that country, the economy, the military situation, the government situation of those countries. Maybe we even bear some blame for the situation that led to people wanting to flee. But doesn't that make you uncomfortable to even consider? Isn't it easier to just think they come from nowhere? They come from the bottom of the ocean. They come from Mars. They come from the Nega realm. Because then, of course, you don't have to do any thinking. You don't have to do any understanding. You don't have to see them as people. They are literally aliens now. It's not enough to use that term. Now they actually come from Mars. And they're speaking all of these languages that we don't know, even though apparently, and I'm actually shocked to find this out, people within the United States communicate in up to 350 different languages, according to the US Census Bureau. I have a feeling most of the people crossing the border fit into that 350. But anyway, I just sort of passed quickly over the Hannibal Lecter thing, which is utterly bizarre. The only thing more bizarre than referencing Silence of the Lambs in a conversation about desperate migrants trying to find a better life for themselves is the fact that it's not the first time he's made that reference. Take a look at this.
Silence of the Lambs, you know what that is? Has anybody seen Silence of the Lambs? Hannibal Lecter, how great an actor was he? You know why I like him? Because he said on television on one of the, I love Donald Trump, so I love him. I love him. I love him. He said that a long time ago. And once he said that, he was in my camp. I was in his camp. Yeah, I don't care if he was the worst actor. I'd say he was great to me.
So weird. So weird to not just think that. Okay, maybe you think that. Maybe you're a shallow, vain person who is desperate for acceptance. Desperate especially to have someone who is on the glowing box in front of you say that you're good. This guy, Donald Trump, who loves to say that he hates Hollywood. He hates all the pop culture. He hates absolutely all of it. And simultaneously is endlessly desperate for the acceptance of this world that he pretends to hate. So all they have to do is say that they like him. And suddenly he loves them. It is one thing to be that way, to actually think that way. And I believe that he does. I mean, it's not just actors. We see that with politicians. You have people who are incredibly critical of him, who now are running for Senate or whatever. And they say that Trump's great. And he hugs them to himself. Like, he is that easy to manipulate. He's easier to win over with fake praise than the dragons of fantasy stories. He's a parody of himself. But I believe that that's the way he is. It is a totally different thing to constantly tell audiences that that's the way you think. And it was, you saw it there with the Hannibal Lecter thing, you know, and the Anthony Hopkins. But over the weekend, he said the same thing about, I think it was about some politician that, you know, he'd heard that they like him. So all of a sudden he just loves him. Oh no, actually it was the leader of Argentina said that he liked MAGA. So I love him. And like, he just says it. I don't care who they are or what they've done. They've praised me, so I love them. And the audience is like, yes, this is the way the guy with the nukes should behave. And they love it. I don't understand it. I don't get the Hannibal Lecter thing. I would say, as critical as I might be and have been so far on the show of him trying to connect in people's minds these desperate migrants who just want to get to a place where they can have a job, build a life, not be killed. They're psychopathic killers and maybe cannibals. It's sick of him to make that connection. But on a certain level though, have I not often just like watched a thing and all of a sudden I can't stop working it into political conversations? That's really what he's doing here. I don't think he's like thinking back to when he saw Silence of the Lambs in 1985, I think he watched it like 3 weeks ago. And I think now he can't stop talking about it. And you know, I've certainly been guilty of that myself. But that said, there is one other excerpt from the interview that I think it's important that you see. So why don't we roll this?
They put the students in the place of our students, like in New York City. We have these wonderful students. They're going to school. All of a sudden, they no longer have a seat. They're no longer invited to the school. We're putting migrants in who don't speak the language. They have no idea what the teacher is saying. And we have children that are no longer going to school. They're throwing them out of the park. There's no more little leagues. There's no more sports. There's no more life in New York and so many of these cities.
Is that really accelerated quickly from someone being bumped out of a chair to there's no more life in New York? If only there was a way we could check, if we could see if there are still things that are living and moving, breathing in New York. But this is how you fearmonger conservatives. I'm not even saying this to my audience. I'm saying this to the next wannabe Trumps who are waiting in the wings for him to finally croak on the toilet thanks to the three McDoubles that he just downed. This is how you do it. You don't demonize in a rational way. You say utterly unfounded, insane things. And you say it with such confidence that it is utterly irrelevant whether someone like me fact checks it. Like if I were to point out that kids still go to school in New York, it doesn't matter. Trump said that they don't, so they don't. If you were to say that like Little League doesn't exist, that might come as a bit of a shock to all of the people actively playing in Little League in New York. Like last weekend and next weekend, but it doesn't matter again because he said that they didn't. And you might think, well, okay, if I believe everything that Donald Trump just said, that migrants have come into New York, which by the way, were shipped there from southern states, but I guess you're not supposed to be mad about that. You're just supposed to be mad about the migrants, regardless of how they got there. They're taking kids out of school who now don't get to go to school. It's literally untrue. There's not a single example of that happening. But if you believed it, you might think, well, perhaps we should fund the schools. Perhaps we should fund Little League. Perhaps we should build more baseball stadiums. Or as he said in a recent interview, knocker fields. Maybe we should build more fields for knockers. But of course, he doesn't actually mean that. And that's not the way that it's going to be received. It never is. When they spent the past couple of years demonizing how the mere existence of trans people was an existential threat to women's sports, it never, over the course of years, despite how much they focused on it, it never extended beyond trans people should not be allowed to engage in sports. There was never a call for funding. There was never renewed interest in the events. There was never a crowdsourced campaign to make sure that every single time high school girls meet in sport to compete, there isn't a single empty seat there. It never happened because Trump talks and the talk is flavored around different subjects, but the subjects are always utterly irrelevant. It doesn't matter. He flavors one speech as being about school or about sports or about the border, but nobody truly cares. That's simply the plate that the dish is resting on, and the dish is othering, demonizing. It's xenophobia. That's what it's there for. And he might pretend briefly to care about languages or schools or knockers or whatever it is, but he doesn't. And he'll move on to a different topic. And all of the people who are cheering along the way, they're not gonna even like experience a brief moment of whiplash of, wait, I thought we were pretending to care about that for a while. That's the way the grift works. It's a lesson for any other Republicans who might be watching this.
I was very honored by a 9-0 vote. And this is for future presidents. This is not for me. This is for future presidents, all presidents. And the next thing coming up, I think, which will be of equal importance, will be a
So that is Donald Trump, who is, of course, very excited about the fact that the Supreme Court has ruled in his favor. It was not a surprise at all, just to, you know, get out in front of any right wingers who are implying that the left is freaking out about this. We think that the Supreme Court got it wrong, but we are hardly surprised that this is the way that they ruled. But Donald Trump, of course, is not happy to just take the win in this area. he wants to try to transition from one win in the Supreme Court to one that seems a little bit less likely, but far more consequential for Donald Trump. And so he bleated this on Truth Social, similar to many statements he's put out before. Without capital P presidential, capital I immunity, a president will not be able to properly function or make decisions in the best interest of the United States of America. Presidents will always be concerned and even paralyzed by the prospect of wrongful prosecution and retaliation after they leave office. And this is where it gets interesting. This could actually lead to extortion and blackmail of a president. The other side would say, if you don't do something just the way we want it, we're gonna go after you when you leave office, or perhaps even sooner. Which again, like nobody, like I don't believe that while a president is in office, they should be immune from prosecution. I don't believe in that. But that's also the way it is right now. So I don't, like, he's going so far beyond even his own argument. But okay, well, we're gonna set that aside. The idea is that if they get Donald Trump for his various crimes, which no one who is not like 3 feet up his bum already knows he did, it's not a debate as to whether he tried to overturn the results of the election. He did in a variety of ways. He did it publicly. He did it enthusiastically. He did it in speeches. He did it in tweets. He did it in all of those different forms. We're not debating whether he stole classified documents. We know he stole classified documents. We know how many classified documents we stole. We know the lengths he went to keep the stolen documents. We know which toilets he kept them next to. Again, the hush money was paid. Nobody is actually debating that at this point. But again, do not think for even 1 second about the crimes that he committed in plain sight. Think only about a mythical slippery slope that he wants you to be more afraid of than you should be afraid of the fact that a guy who's already broken the law while in office might well do it again. And this guy would be back in office to break the law, having already gotten a pass for the many times that he broke the law. He would once again be under the shield of you can't prosecute a president while he's in office. And he might at that point even have received the presidential immunity that he so wants for if he ever deigns to leave office. Does anyone think that he will break fewer laws at that point? But again, don't think about his crimes, either the ones that he's already committed or the ones that he might commit in the future. Instead, think about the fact that theoretically, every president could be the target of wrongful prosecution. Now, I know what you're thinking, but no other president ever has. And I know what some of you might be thinking, is that connected to the fact that they don't appear to have broken the law in a way that's very easy to establish? And I would say that you're onto something. But he really does believe that this would work. I don't know if he believes that it'll work to convince any Democrats or even independents. It doesn't appear, based on the polling, that it is working. But it is definitely working to keep his base in line. They have not been shaken by any of these cases. They haven't even been shaken by the ones that he's already lost. The fact that he has now been adjudicated by a jury and judges to have been a fraud, that effectively the Trump Organization was one massive case of tax fraud. And the fact that he was already found to have sexually abused a woman and then spent literally decades defaming her has made no difference whatsoever. I don't even know why he sends so many of these messages. He appears to have a fear of losing his base that there is no basis to believe would ever happen. Why would they ever turn from him now after everything they've been through? I just don't get why he's so afraid. In any event, coming up on April 22nd, we'll find out if they found the arguments that were so eloquently bleated by Donald Trump to be convincing. Unfortunately, the joke is on us. At that point, it'll be so late that I'm not sure that it will even matter, that there will be time to fit in a trial before the election actually happens. But I am excited to find out whether Donald Trump will have immunity, whether future presidents will be assured that they can break the law in whatever way they want and then be just fine with it. Just get off scot free for the rest of their life, and also wait to find out what sort of government we'll actually have. You know, will we have presidents who are bound by the law, or will we have a cast of criminals who get into the position knowing that they can use it for their own personal advantage? They can literally track down and kill their political opponents. It doesn't matter. The Supreme Court will have given their stamp of approval to it. Fingers crossed. $10 Tens of millions of Americans desperately want to hear what Donald Trump thinks when it comes to the hush money trial, says the legal team of Donald Trump. And for that reason, there can't be a gag order on him. Donald Trump's ability to talk about the hush money payments, to talk about how he swears he's not attracted to Stormy Daniels or whatever nonsense he wants to say, that can't be infringed because people want to hear it. Now, they've already heard all of this many, many times, but the legal team believes that they need to be able to hear it again. Even if there are significant potential side effects and ramifications of him going ungagged in this fashion. But this is a fight, and we don't yet know who's going to win. Manhattan prosecutors want him to be barred from making remarks that could potentially incite attacks on anyone involved in the trial that could be witnesses who might testify, jurors, court staff, the judge. And they say, the Trump legal team, that the proposed gag would harm not only Trump, but those who want to listen to his campaign speech. So, and bear in mind, he has a chance in this case because you can see there that his lawyers are listed and Alina Haba is not a part of it. So this thing is not necessarily a lock for those who are against Donald Trump as they have been in the past. So they should be able to hear Trump's campaign speech. And my immediate thought is maybe he could talk about policy or something. Maybe he could talk about something other than the fact that he thinks that Stormy Daniels has a horse face or whatever nonsense he'll say. Maybe he could talk about something other than whoever the judge ends up being is anti-Trump and they had a second cousin who once donated to Biden or something. Maybe that's not actually core or shouldn't be core to his campaign to become president again. But from Trump's point of view, I do believe that he believes that it is. And I do think again that he always wants to play defense against his base understanding who he is and what he's done. And in particular, in all of these cases, Donald Trump wants to be able to attack the witnesses publicly and privately. We know that he does witness intimidation like it's some sort of natural reflex of his. And he definitely wants to attack any jurors that, you know, some right-wing provocateur makes a claim against. He definitely wants to attack the other lawyers. You know, he wants to attack the jury. All of that is true. But I want you all to remember that there is a particular special reason that he might want to have as much leeway as he can get in how he communicates about this topic. Because we already know from prior reporting that this is the one that got through to Melania. Okay, she doesn't care about the Trump organization being a big fraud or whatever. Why the hell would she care about that? For some reason, the fact that dozens of women made claims that he had sexually harassed or assaulted them, we didn't get good reliable reporting that had really bothered her. The E. Jean Carroll thing, the fact that he is now, according to a jury, a sexual abuser, we've never seen any indication that that bothers her. But when it comes to this, we already know that it did. We know that when the initial reporting came out, she was supposed to go on this foreign trip with him and decided not to do that. We know that she specifically left his side to go back to Mar-a-Lago to humiliate him because she was feeling humiliated. And as much as I'm not a fan of Melania Trump or whatever, I understand where she's coming from. It is utterly humiliating to have to go through this and to have to pretend to be okay with it, to put like a strong face forward and imply that Donald Trump is not, you know, an utter embarrassment of a husband and a man. That's gotta be tough. And she's about to go through it again. Like at the end of the day, the vast majority of the people who are gonna be tuning into this trial and waiting to see what happens with it, waiting to see what Trump will say about it. What we wanna know is what's the evidence? Did he do this, which he did? Did he try to do the payments? He did. Did he try to reject the payments at the end and not pay her after he won the election? Yes, that's true too. But we want to know what laws he potentially broke and if there are going to be consequences for it. But for Melania, like every single day of this is going to be a personal torture. And I don't think that Donald Trump has the ability to come up with a sequence of words that will reassure her. But he's got to try from his point of view. And so I think that that's a special extra layer of seasoning on this appeal. He never wants to be gagged. That is ultimately true. Nobody doubts that. But in this case, the dude does not want to be limited in how he attacks Stormy Daniels, calls her a liar, implies that it didn't happen, no matter how much evidence comes up. And so it's going to be very interesting to see in this particular case whether the gag actually goes through, because there are huge consequences either way, not only in terms of the possible threats that might come to those involved in the trial. And there's a long history of that bomb threats against the judges that they happened in the civil fraud trial. That same judge received a packet of white powder. So the threats have already come. They will continue to come. We know that the AG in New York as well also received other threats, voicemails and things like that. But then you also have the fact that there's domestic concerns for him to worry about.
What's troubling about the slow jobless rate is the rapid rate of wage inflation. That's now running at 4.5%. Chances are, if the economy continues to grow at a rate of roughly 2% or faster, we are going to see a further tightening of the labor market. And with that, even faster wage growth, and that's going to be bad news for inflation, especially consumer services price inflation. If we want to get inflation under control, we've got to get wage growth down to something close to 3%.
It's a good point.
I take all of my business news from a sunburned egg. But anyway, that was economist John Lansky on Maria Bartiromo's show on Fox Business to make sure that any conservative worker who's watching this knows that when they see that wages are at last going up, you should be very concerned about that. You know how we on Fox and Fox Business have been telling you that inflation is terrible and you can't afford to pay for literally anything and you're probably going to go broke and you're probably going to be destitute, and now you're making more money? That's also bad. Both of those things are bad. You not making enough money is bad, but not nearly as bad as you now making money. That is truly cause for concern. So what they're responding to there is the fact that the jobs reports over the past few months have been good. And that does not mean that the economic troubles that have faced the vast majority of Americans are suddenly gone. A month or two of above average wage growth does not take away the fact that against inflation, people are in a worse position than they were several years ago. But with all that said, the fact that there are some good signs is enough to terrify Fox News and, by proxy, their viewers. And so we've got what's being called blowout job growth as well as solid wage gains. You can see that the unemployment rate was just 3.7% last month. That means that below 4%, two consecutive years of unemployment. That is the longest such stretch in more than 50 years. Now, if you were to like say that out loud on Fox News, that would make Biden look kind of good from the perspective of a business channel. But of course, they're not going to say that. Ignore it. More jobs were created in 2023 than previously estimated. And it wasn't just that jobs were made, that there are new jobs and that unemployment is low. That is like used as like a proxy for the health of the economy, generally by people who are more interested in the status of corporations than workers. And simply because jobs had been lost and there are now jobs does not mean that the jobs that have come have comparable pay and or benefits. So don't simply accept that one job is the same as any other job. But that said, when it's accompanied by indications that wages on average are going up and that the wage growth is outpacing the inflation that we've experienced over the past few months, if you care at all about workers, that certainly seems to be good news. But nobody can be surprised that this is what Fox is saying in light of wages going up. They have always, no matter how many times they whine and cry about being populist, they do not believe that workers should be paid. They do not believe that wages should under any conditions grow up. And I know that because I've seen them respond to it over the course of the past decade and a half. No matter the economic conditions, they will find an excuse for why it's supposedly bad for workers that they ever be paid more than they were the day before. And it is not just Fox. It's across all of right-wing media. Matt Walsh can always be reliably counted on to tell the likely not wealthy conservatives who unfortunately listen to his show that they should never hope to earn more than they already do. And in particular, those who are in the less should expect the least. He said, you don't need a higher minimum wage. You just need to not be on minimum wage anymore. Because against every attempt that the world has made to educate him and other conservatives about the fact that those on minimum wage jobs are not just 14-year-olds flipping burgers, but some full-grown people desperately trying to make ends meet under incredibly difficult circumstances that a person whose job is exclusively commenting on stuff they don't understand could never understand, that some of them have two or three of these jobs that they're working just to be able to pay their ever increasing rent. He's going to assume that it's just the high school workers and that's it. You're supposed to have this job, you know, like he did. He did a summer at, you know, Dairy Queen or whatever, and then he moved on with his life, grifting to the right wing. Why don't you grift to the right wing, dear viewer? That's the empathy that he has for you. Laura Ingraham goes beyond even that, saying that it isn't just the input side, sort of your wages going into the economy that should matter. You shouldn't even care about the inflation that we demonize. She praised the companies that are doing shrinkflation, this idea that while prices are going up for food, in some cases, it's even more dishonest than that, in that a company will keep the same container but put less of the product in it, effectively robbing you of some percentage of the food in comparison to what you used to pay for it. Now, they imply that inflation is bad because saying that in the moment seems bad for Biden. But as soon as Biden is criticizing shrinkflation, suddenly the script flips. And it's good that companies are robbing conservatives of their cookies and ice cream. Doesn't make sense to me, but I have not seen a right-wing outcry against Laura Ingraham for saying that. And again, the minimum wage stuff, that is not new at all. You can reliably expect that Fox News is gonna do that. One guest claimed that if the minimum wage went up at long last, after years and years and years and years of it being the same, the federal minimum wage, that that could lead to $15 Big Macs. And here, let me waste 15 seconds of your time. When you look at, for instance, McDonald's or Burger King's, other chain restaurants that have both locations in the United States as well as internationally, and you go to the international ones, the workers are not paid $4 an hour, $7 an hour. They're paid more and they have benefits and they're allowed to unionize, and many do. And yet, the burgers are not even as expensive as they are in the United States. I love when people like pretend to be curious about the world and propose hypotheticals that are not hypothetical. We actually have the evidence if they cared enough to actually look into it, but they definitely do not. And so all of this is to say, if you're a conservative and somehow you're still watching me, and I doubt that that's the case, I don't understand why you care so much about these people on TV who care so little about you and your economic situation and the prospects that that situation will ever improve. I understand that I'm a godless commie or whatever, but I want you to earn more money someday. I want you to be able to save and invest, perhaps own a home. I want all of that for you. And more so, I want your kids to earn more money than you do now. Not a single one of these jackals can match me on that. And it's weird that you hate me but love them. In any event, let's turn to a different form of hate, starting with this.
Well, NBC is reporting right now that Michelle Obama's not going to run for president. They're making that announcement this morning. Will you ask, is there a woman in there that we can get her reaction?
Yeah, right here. Let me introduce you. I remember her last name because who forgets a last name that is Tax? But I don't remember your first name. Paula Tax. So NBC just reported that Michelle Obama has said she will not run for president.
Thank God. Okay. Yes.
Ainsley said, I would love the reaction from a woman in the crowd. And
I wouldn't vote for a woman. And especially, you know, Nikki Haley, I'm just going to say this. She's probably menopausal. We don't need that.
Okay. She said, how about we vote for people regardless of their gender, just the right person for the job for America.
That's not what she said at all. I feel like she said the exact opposite thing, but it's hard to remember. I mean, it was seconds before you desperately tried to re-spin what she was saying. That woman was very clear as the crazy last name that she has. You shouldn't vote for a woman because they're a woman. Now, you know, we might flavor it with, she's also an old woman and I hate them. I especially hate old women. All women, definitely. Old women, especially. But regardless of whether they have menopause, definitely don't vote for them. I mean, Michelle Obama is not menopausal and she had no interest in her. I honestly don't even understand why that guy decided that he needed to run cover for that woman. The man sitting next to her, I'm presuming is her husband. He didn't have a problem with it. Maybe she's well trained by the horrible experience of having been married to him for literally decades. I don't know. Did anyone else in the diner speak up? Do we think that anyone watching that segment at home, watching Fox and Friends, was aghast at what that woman was saying? How could she say that about women? I believe that we should just vote for whoever has the best qualification. Who actually believes that? And by the way, if you're actually talking about qualifications, either in terms of what the person has done in government, or even if we're just talking about like mental capacity qualifications, I am no fan of Nikki Haley. I think that's well established. But how the hell are you going to make the case that Donald Trump is better qualified to hold office than Nikki Haley? Donald Trump is menopausal. I mean, whatever male version of menopause you have at that point, he's way, way older than Nikki Haley. He's far less capable of holding a thought in his skull. It's such a weird position, but not a surprising one, because this is what the right thinks. They either honestly believe it or they know that they're supposed to say it, particularly if you're a conservative woman. You are supposed to try to earn credibility by scorching your own kind. That's what you do. It's not just the women. Here, take a look at this.
What do you think of Nikki Haley? Did you ever consider her?
What I got to say, you don't really want to put it on.
Let me hear it.
Well, a woman's not going to be a good president. She have no balls to scratch. She's just going to scratch her head. All a woman's good for in my book is having babies and taking care of the house. But that's the old thing, you know. But I'm old school.
So you never even considered her?
No.
Mainly because she's a woman?
Because she's female. I mean, females, don't get me wrong, females know what they're doing, but they still got to have a little bit of guidance. Trump would be the one to guide her through the CEO thing.
Dear God, I've never heard such an insane series of beliefs stated in a way that implies that the person saying them is utterly bored with their own insanity. That guy was barely capable of staying upright. And look, I don't know, maybe you're like me. He was being interviewed by that reporter for NBC News. And I hope the follow-up question was not, what do you think about me? Because I'd be very worried about his response to that. That dude didn't feel like he needed to hide anything that he believed. And why would he? Men like him have been emboldened by the right wing, and not just right wing men. They've been emboldened by a lot of conservative women who have made the dark bargain that if you want to be a conservative, be a, you know, elected Republican or whatever, which many do, there are a lot of genuinely conservative women, then you have to bow down to these hierarchies that we've established. You have to be okay with the idea that you are inherently by birth inferior to us. You're inferior even to people like Donald Trump, who are riddled with personal failings and mental failings and legal failings. Nikki Haley, I don't love. I don't like a lot of her positions, but she's never run afoul of the law in the way that Donald Trump has. She can speak without utterly stumbling over her own words. And yet it doesn't matter. Again, it doesn't matter because it's not about the person. It's not like that reporter in the first clip tried to pretend that this is all about qualifications. It will never, that stuff will never add up to being more important than what you have gotten by virtue of birth, whether it's in terms of gender or race or ableness or whatever, or even class. Because of course they worship Donald Trump in large part due to the fact that he was born into a wealthy family. We are running low on time. Do we have time to show? Okay, let's go very quickly. Okay, T.I. says he can't vote for Hillary Clinton for president because she's a woman. That's not very specific about why, but let's see. Letter to the editor in time. Oh, this is in Cosmo. Argues Hillary Clinton can't be president because of that time of the month. My final point on this will be that very often, if you dig into why they have a problem with a woman being president, sometimes they'll say something like she won't be brave enough or whatever, as if Donald Trump is a picture of courage. But often they will say that she is either inherently too irrational or emotional, or at the very least during that time of the month she will be. Donald Trump is the most emotional person I have ever had to pay attention to in my life. Prone to fits of rage and jealousy and fear and insanity. He can't keep it together ever for 5 minutes. But a woman might have a period. It's so weird, the inconsistencies in the way people approach candidates. I don't know. Maybe someday we'll have that conservative woman who can do the MAGA thing, can be the female Trump. I don't know. Maybe they'll accept her at that point. but I wouldn't have high hopes if I was one of you conservative women just getting into politics right now. This is how they see you.
Now, I will say my race here in Texas is a battleground race. My last race, as you know, Maria, I won by less than 3 points. And so I'm worried about this election.
Ted Cruz is worried about this election. And normally when politicians say that, what they're saying is give me money. Give me that money right now. I need it. Even if they're dominating in the polls or whatever, they want money. They want it right now. But he actually has real reason to be worried. And we want to dive into a little bit of it. So let's break it down. A University of Texas at Tyler survey found that Cruz and one of the 8 candidates running against him, this is Representative Colin Allred, that's the current front runner, are both tied at 41% when potential voters are asked who they may support. There are 12% saying that they are unsure. So we don't know exactly how that 12% might break down, but Ted Cruz is the incumbent. He has been in that office for many years at this point. He is a national figure. He is, you know, for some reason, he has a good following on the right. That is so not the position that a senator running in Texas wants to be in at this point. And I want to remind you for context that the last time he had to run for re-election, he did win. Obviously, he's the senator. He won against Beto O'Rourke, but it was close, 2.6 points. And look, I'm not entirely sure exactly how the polling went for that. Contextually, I don't remember Beto O'Rourke like leading in any of the polls 6 months out from the election. So it is possible that he is in a literal worse position right now. Now, we have to speculate as to why that might be. Why is it that Ted Cruz is doing really poorly? Well, the reasons I would like it to be is that he has generated a horrible reputation for himself that even conservatives should wonder why he is so quick to flee their state when things get tough, when conservatives and farmers are dying in the freezing winters or dying in the scorching summers and the power grid isn't being changed in a way that will protect their lives. And he instead flees to go on a vacation or something. If I were a conservative, that would bother me. Or the fact that he's been a senator for years and years and years, and what achievements has he brought home to Texas? He's got a popular podcast. I'll give him that. But on policy, I don't know what he's delivered. It could be that. But it could just be, you know, Texas is shifting in a direction that is not as solidly red. Some of the urban areas of Texas are growing fast. Everybody's speculated that that demographic shift is someday going to put it in play. Maybe we're finally seeing that. It could also be, and look, this is more of a thing that will play out on election day. If it's going to be that close, what he needs is someone who is going to boost turnout. And Donald Trump has never been that guy. Not in the races where he's the figurehead of the party, but not running in the midterms. And even not when he's running as president. If Donald Trump is the nominee, and if he's a drag on the turnout of Republicans in November, that could potentially be enough for Cruz to lose re-election. And that is not what he needs right about now. Now, Allred has raised $21 million. It's a lot of money. As I said, there are 7 other candidates. We don't know exactly how that's going to shake out. Perhaps we'll see. But for now, I just want to go to one more clip of Ted Cruz. This is when he was on Mark Levin's show attacking Mitch McConnell for not helping him as things were already not looking great.
So my last reelection 6 years ago was, at the time, it was the most expensive Senate race in U.S. history. I was outspent 3-1. And I ended up winning by less than 3 points. Mitch McConnell spent $300 million nationwide in Senate races. You know how much he spent in Texas? Zero. Not one penny. I'm right now, as you know, in a very tough reelection race in Texas. The Democrats, Chuck Schumer has made clear, I'm his number one target. The Democrats intend to spend over $100 million to defeat me in Texas. We just had a poll last week that showed it as a 1-point race. And yet, we can expect Mitch again not to spend any money to defend me.
Maybe Mitch McConnell's not all bad. He's going to leave Ted Cruz out alone, cold in the night to fend for himself. Maybe he's not all bad.
I'm calling on Republicans and Democrats immediately to institute, to get to Washington and institute the death penalty for drug dealers. You will no longer have a problem. If you look at countries through all throughout the world, no matter where you go, the only ones that don't have a drug problem are those that institute the death penalty for drug dealers. China has no drug problem. No, China has no drug problem. You know, we're becoming a drugged out country. I don't know if you know it or not. We have drugs at a level that's never been seen.
So basically nothing he said there is true, but let's take him at his word that he believes we need to be far harsher on those who deal drugs, those who take drugs. It is a problem that cannot be taken lightly. In fact, even the death penalty should be in play. Well, an old Donny boy is going to be interested in some of the reporting that's come out recently about the situation in the Trump White House when it comes to drugs. And you may know the story that I'm talking about here. It's been coming out in dribs and drabs over the course of the past few weeks about how casual drugs were being prescribed or not prescribed, just handed out. But what you may not know is how willing many in the White House were to roast Donald Trump as the cause of people's developing drug problems. So we're going to jump through all of that. But a lot of this interview is coming out from, there's a Defense Department Inspector General report, as well as interviews with people who served in the White House. And what they're saying is that both Speed and Xanax were just being handed out willy-nilly, like Pop-Tarts perhaps. The stimulant was routinely given to staffers who needed an energy boost after a late night. I think that's what Speed is for, when you had to work a little late, or just a pick-me-up to handle another day at what's described as a uniquely stressful job. And I agree, working for Donald Trump is probably pretty stressful. One of the former officials told Rolling Stone that the White House was awash in Speed. So I'm assuming the death penalty is going to be being doled out by Donald Trump as freely as the Speed was, because we can't allow druggies like this to be running our government. Apparently, samples of the stimulant were passed around for those who contributed lines to Trump speeches. Like as a reward, is this Pavlovian conditioning or something? Like, you give me a good racist line, I give you some poppers or something. If they work late on foreign policy initiatives, which I think means the Muslim ban, or those who were coping with bad media inquiries, you just need some speed to deal with that. But like, if this doesn't make it seem ridiculous enough, it was described by one anonymous source as kind of like the Wild West. Things were pretty loose. Whatever someone needs, we were gonna fill this, which is a really weird way to say that. But then you might wonder, but why is it so necessary? There's gotta be a good reason. And a good reason was provided by an anonymous source who said, I had a lot going on in my life and I wanted some, which is not, that's not super convincing. Yeah, most people who take drugs wanted some, but why? I have follow-up questions. In any event, senior staffers often took Xanax with alcohol, which I think is specifically the way you're not supposed to take it, but that's how they coped. And it was, in fact, coping. One former senior administration official, who unfortunately is anonymous here, said, "You try working for him and not chasing pills with alcohol." Damn. I want you to bear in mind, Donald Trump did almost nothing as president. They passed a tax bill. They banned a religion. They locked up some kids, but that was mostly the Border Patrol. What was going on in there in the absence of policy that was so unbearable that they were mixing in a dangerous fashion pills and alcohol? We may never know, but we do know that the Trump White House had the highest turnover in 40 years. And honestly, I'm not surprised by that at all. Now, follow-up question, and this one has legal consequences. Who is prescribing all of these drugs? Well, first of all, a lot of the drugs were not being prescribed, and that's where theoretically the law should maybe get involved. They were literally just dealing drugs willy-nilly. Two different sources have confirmed that it was basically like finals on a college campus. Adderall, Xanax, Speed were just being handed out without prescriptions. But those who were being prescribed, there's a lot of reason to believe that it was Ronnie Jackson, who, based on his media appearances recently, might be doing a little bit of the old self-prescribing. I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying the dude sweats a lot in his interviews. Now, he is lashing out at this with tweets like this, saying the Rolling Stone is a liberal rag used as a propaganda tool for far-left zealots. They never get tired of lying. It's another hit piece, morons. But like, the sources are coming from inside the White House. It wasn't just Rolling Stone people. There are so many people who worked for Donald Trump who are so ready to tell their story in book form if they can to cash in, but to, you know, this interviewer if necessary. In either case, there was obviously a big problem of drugs, and under a more vigorous, angrier, more vindictive Donald Trump second term, one would imagine the drug problem is going to be even worse. And if that's the case, you know, maybe the death penalty. I'm not saying anything, but Donald Trump is.